career for the future is possibly one of the most important 21st century skills, and yet so few Canadians excel at it. Today's Career Buzz guests connect the dots on new thinking and ways to build your career management skills. This is Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Tony Botello is manager of Simon Fraser University's Career and Volunteer Services. Tony joins Career Buzz today to share his perspectives on career education in the age of engagement. This is a topic he recently presented at the National Kinexus Career Conference. He'll be talking about student engagement and retention, and whether there's a relationship between these ideas and with developing your career for the future. But first, Dave Redekop is president and executive director of Life Role Development Group. That's a career development, leadership, and productivity consulting group based in Edmonton. Dave's passion for career development has resulted in models and projects, including the Now, Next, Future approach to career development. He's also penned papers on gumption, discipline, and with-itness, and passion-based succession planning, and moving toward an anti-Dilbert workplace. Dave won the National Stu Conger Award for Leadership in Career Counseling and Career Development, and Dave Redekop joins us live by phone from Edmonton, Alberta. Dave, welcome to Career Buzz.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Mark.
So, Dave, what do you like about your work life these days?
Well, there are many things, but, you know, if I had to sum it all up, what's particularly suited for me is variety. My firm does an awful lot of things, and I get to have my hands in an awful lot of things. So everything from pure research about, for example, counseling practices to, you know, developing product for users, you know, websites or booklets or pamphlets, to training practitioners all over Alberta and elsewhere, to coaching, doing executive coaching with leaders. We just do an awful lot of stuff. It's all related to career development in some way, shape, or form. But it's a pretty diverse field, and I get to touch almost all of it, which is great.
Right on. Now, you know, we're on a career show here, and it's always helpful for people to name the skills that they use. Can I ask you to consider what you've just told us? You do some research, you do some product development training, coaching. What are some skills that you draw on to be successful in your career?
Well, there are a few sets. You know, on the research side and the product development side and model building side, there are these two very broad sets of being able to analyze information and then to resynthesize it in different ways, put it together in different ways. And most, you know, most model building is that sort of exercise where you're not necessarily creating something new, you're just taking something or a bunch of ideas that other people have and putting them together in different ways with different language. And for me, that is an awful lot of fun. But the other piece, of course, of what I do in coaching and teaching, all those relational skills around just being able to ask interesting questions, to, you know, listen to the answers and actually really listen to them, those very fundamental, I guess, abilities to just get along with people and be really curious about them. Because if there's one kind of core attribute I need in my role, it's curiosity. And that lends itself to the listening, but also to the analysis and also to the synthesis, you know, always asking that question, gee, what would these ideas look like if we put them together this way rather than this way?
Yeah, right on. I like the way you put that in your own words, that one of your skills is to ask interesting questions and really listen to the answers. You know, it's so helpful, I think, for listeners to hear people describe their skills in their own language, as opposed to some of the language we see when you take these career tests and whatnot. It just is such regular language and so easy to understand.
I couldn't agree more.
So yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Now, let's figure out how you came to be doing this work and briefly have a look at your career story. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the interesting ideas and the Now, Next, Future approach in a few minutes. But how did you come to be doing this work? What did you, where was your early career, and what did you study in post-secondary that started you off on this journey?
Well, like most people in the whole career development world, I got into it by accident, and there's a lovely irony there. But I started out, you know, when I was a little kid, say grade six, sort of, really, you know, thinking somehow I would become a teacher. You know, my father was a teacher and a professor of teaching, and my mother had been a teacher, and, you know, there's kind of a tradition there. So I thought I'd be a teacher. So I progressed through high school kind of with that as a default assumption without taking it too seriously or questioning it too seriously. And so, you know, it was just assumed I would go to university, get a Bachelor of Education, and then the issue would be what would I major in. And I kind of got a kick out of physics in high school. And so I majored in physics and mathematics in my Bachelor of Education program, went off to university, and of course I had to earn some money. So I had fortunately got a part-time job as a mechanic, and very much a backyard mechanic. I'm not certified or anything like that, but the guys at the shop taught me what I needed to know.
Yes.
And I had a blast doing that, and then I went to university, and eventually discovered quantum mechanics, and quantum mechanics is a mind-bending field, and it bent my mind enough that I thought, oh boy, you know, I'm not sure this whole, you know, physics thing is actually my bag. And that question really got me thinking about a lot of things, about is teaching my bag, is physics my thing, and just asking questions I hadn't really kind of thought through carefully. And as part of my Bachelor of Education, I had to take some psychology courses. It was a requirement. And they didn't interest me in the least when I signed up for them. But I'll tell you, once I started taking them, I just couldn't stop. And so, in fact, I put my B.Ed. on hold, and I ended up going off and getting a B.A. honors in psychology before finishing off my B.Ed.
That's great, Dave.
It was just a ton of fun.
It's so interesting to hear. We've heard stories like that on Career Buzz before, you know, like especially in education, right? And if there are listeners who are tuning in this morning who are in a degree, completing a degree, maybe taking a hiatus from a degree, just how interesting it can be to really try a lot of different things, because you have this notion of what you think you're good at or you will like. But so often we've heard on this show people taking these random courses and finding that was what grabbed them, and their whole career moved in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a tricky balance, right? Because, you know, university, especially nowadays, is quite expensive.
Yes.
and it's quite an investment, right? So I see students who really want to be efficient about it. And yet, you know, and I know that you have to take some potentially inefficient risks to really explore what's going on out there, you know. And personally, I think it all pays off somehow. But it sure doesn't feel that way sometimes when you have a whole bunch of student loans.
Yeah, right on. And inefficient risks is such an interesting way to put it, which are actually more efficient in the long run because it can expose you to more things and allow this kind of career emergence to happen.
Oh, absolutely. We're
talking to Dave Redekop here. He's president of Life Role Development Group based in Edmonton, Alberta. You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM and CIUT.FM worldwide. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. So, Dave, what happened next? You decided to move your education, at least, in the direction of psychology. What happened next?
Well, then, you know, I got my psychology degree in. Had a ton of fun, had brilliant professors. This was at the University of Winnipeg, which at the time was a very small teaching institution. So, you know, we really got to know our professors and vice versa. So I finished off my B.Ed. because I kind of felt obliged to. And thank goodness nobody hired me after I got my B.Ed. I did apply for some teaching jobs, and the market in Manitoba was tight at the time. And thank goodness, because that forced me to kind of rethink what I was doing. And I ended up actually coming to Edmonton to go to graduate school. And my plan then was, because I love psychology, I thought, well, I'll go to grad school. I'll take a master's degree in counseling, not because I wanted to be a counselor, but because I really wanted to understand sort of certain things around personality and human development. And then I thought, okay, ultimately I'll be a professor in psychology. You know, it's been the environment I'd been in for quite some time, and I thought I could do this and it would be fun.
Yes.
And so I continued on, and I finished my master's, and I did a very lackadaisical job search after my master's degree. And again, fortunately, nobody hired me. And so I scrambled, got into the PhD program at U of A, only because I really didn't have another option other than, at that time I wasn't a mechanic to pay my way through school, I was fixing vending machines. And so it was either fix vending machines for a year, you know, or do a PhD or get started. And so luckily they let me in at the last minute, and I got a PhD eventually. But what was pivotal about that was my PhD was in developmental psychology, but what was pivotal is I bumped into a fellow named Chris Magnuson, who's now Dean of Education at Simon Fraser University. But at the time, he and I were classmates.
Yes.
And he was the one he was doing some work for a place called the Career Development Institute at the time, and they needed some hired guns to do some writing. And he said, hey, do you want to do some writing? And I said, well, I'm not actually interested in career development. He said, yeah, but I pay better than vending. And so there I was doing some writing for Chris Magnuson, and that was a life-changing event because then I just got, I met Chris's boss, a fellow by the name of Barry Day, and just totally bought into career development, found it totally exciting, and it wrapped up everything else I had previously learned around human development, around motivation, around personality, research. It just allowed me to do everything that I had learned.
Isn't that interesting, Dave? So two stories of being drawn into something that you hadn't anticipated would be interesting. First, psychology, and then second, career development, that kind of came at you from left field. And what do you have to say to listeners, especially those people who are considering a graduate degree, whether a master's or even a PhD, because they aren't successful in their job search right now or they haven't tried as hard as they need to, and your story is one where you did that without really thinking through, yeah, I really, really want to do this. You did it sort of by default. What advice do you have for listeners who might be in a similar situation?
Well, my advice is loose advice because obviously, you know, it's very individualized what one would do. But, you know, if it actually allows you to follow something you're deeply interested or deeply passionate about, you won't go wrong. Keeping in mind, of course, you got to pay attention to your finances and student loans and all those sorts of things. But, you know, I have never regretted ever learning something that I was deeply interested in. I have regretted learning things just to get through a hoop,
yes.
You know, which I had to do for my Bachelor of Education. And there were some courses there that I took that were really irrelevant to me. I forgot them the moment the final exam was done, that sort of thing. But the courses that were meaningful to me, I still can remember, you know, lectures, readings from back in the 80s because they were just that intriguing. So, that's a long story to say, follow your heart really is my advice. And then just, you know, be realistic enough about finances and that sort of thing to make sure you don't, collapse under the weight of financial burden.
Right on. And you've also just made this distinction between what are called fundamental versus instrumental decisions. And if listeners have ever seen this book, The Adventures of Johnny Bunko by Daniel Pink,
mm-hmm.
and he makes that big distinction. You know, you fundamental reasons, you do it because you actually like it, it feels good. And instrumental reasons, well, I don't really like it, but I'm doing it because I think it'll take me somewhere. And your perspective is you can't go wrong if you make at least learning decisions based on fundamental reasoning as opposed to instrumental.
Absolutely, and you just got to manage the instrumentals. And my way of doing that was fixing vending machines. That sort of kept me out of debt.
Yes. We're talking to Dave Redekop here of Life Role Development Group based in Edmonton, Alberta. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz, CIUT 89.5 FM and CIUT.FM worldwide. So, Dave, before, you know, you've just kind of walked us through the early part of your career, and I want to jump over in a moment to some of the ideas that you've been working on. Is there any other major twist or turn or turning point that you need to tell listeners to bring us to the present? Because you kind of took us to the beginning of your career development work, and that was at the end of the PhD, and you've done quite a lot since.
Yeah, you know, there is one more huge one, which is I had mentioned Barry Day, who was the fellow Chris had been working for at the Career Development Institute, and Barry is one of these fellows who you either kind of get very quickly compelled to follow or you feel very quickly compelled to go the other way because he's kind of a force of nature. But what was interesting interesting there, and this was pivotal, was he ended up being an incredibly significant mentor in terms of areas of insecurity for me. For example, you know, I had told him when I started working there, and he wanted me to work full time. I said, "Look, I'll do research, I'll do writing, et cetera, but I will never sell something I don't want to sell. I'm not comfortable selling. I'm not good at selling." And I had tried this before as a student. And he said, "No worries, you know, I'll never make you sell." But you know what he did, being a good mentor, was gradually he started exposing me to things like writing proposals, going to meetings with clients, and he did it in a way where he'd say, "David, I need you to come to this meeting. You're not going to sell anything. I just need you to explain this technical element of something."
Yes.
And in a way, kind of seduced me into selling without knowing I was selling. And after a couple of years of that, all of a sudden, that was my favorite thing to do, actually, was to write proposals for a few years. There was nothing that thrilled me more than sitting down with a clean computer screen and figuring out a project.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. And it sounds like he saw something in you, Dave, that you couldn't even see in yourself. In fact, you were so resistant to it, but you had these preconceived notions of what selling might mean, and he saw some other kind of skill or ability for you to connect with prospective clients and to write. And so, you used the word seduce. He kind of influenced you in this subtle way.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say about, you know, the role of certain other people? Certainly not everybody, but some other people can see things in us that we simply can't see in ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of it is about belief systems, right? So, you know, what Barry saw was that I had these belief systems that were, you know, just completely preventing me from executing on skills I already possessed around teaching and persuasion and getting along with people. But, you know, I had these belief systems around sales, et cetera. And I think that's where mentors can be extremely helpful is, you know, seeing that core talent there and then figuring out, okay, so what belief systems are turning off certain behaviors that are stopping you from you know, your full expression? And Barry was particularly just gifted at being able to see those things and then figure out ways to change the belief system.
Right on.
Very powerful.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And mentoring has been such a big thing in people's career development. We've had a number of guests on the show, and if people are looking at the Career Buzz archive, we had Sean Mintz, who runs an organization called Mentor City, and that there's a website, mentorcity.something, and Don Carmont, who also wrote a book on mentoring, and both of those guys had a lot to say about the link between mentoring and career development.
Yeah, I think it's very big, and it's something we've been working on off and on, but then we always get distracted, is the idea of protégeship, because there is a role for the protégé as well, right? Not to just wait around and hope like crazy a mentor notices you. And I think there's a whole bunch of skill sets around being a protégé so that, you know, you can actually make full use of a mentor. Obviously, you still need to have the mentor, but I think that relationship can get maximized if the protege puts some effort into it.
Right on. Well, there's a whole topic right there.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Career Buzz here, and we're talking to Dave Redekop of the Life Role Development Group. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM and CIUT.FM worldwide. Dave, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some of your ideas. You've created a lot of powerful tools and methods, and one in particular that you've shared, and you and I have talked about it in the past, is this now next future approach to career development. So why should we look at our careers from these three perspectives?
Well, if I could take a step back, I think one of the things when I work with people who are looking at their own career development, one of the things they're struggling with often is there's just so much opportunity out there. Not in the sense of, you know, available work, but in the sense of work options. You know, there's well over 40,000 occupations, and people start looking at options, and that just becomes overwhelming. And so I'm always looking for ways to simplify without being simplistic about things so that people can just get a handle on what they need to do in terms of their next few steps. Because the more I do this work, the more I think movement is the aim, really. Movement in a direction, you know. And all the stuff we do around planning, that's great, and goal setting, that's great. But really, to me, all that stuff just serves our ability to help our clients move. And so with that in mind, then I think, okay, well, how do we help clients move? And what I see is, you know, people who, and I work with mostly employed people.
Yeah.
I don't work with the unemployed typically. And I see the employed just being really busy. They've got lives to lead, you know, mortgages to pay, kids to feed, that sort of thing. And then they're really, really busy at work, and they get all consumed in the now. You know, they get their heads down and don't see that the world's changing, the future is coming at them. And then when change happens, they're just not ready for it. It comes as a surprise, right? And so, for example, you know, right now there's in Alberta, there's been these budget cuts announced to universities. And you know and I know there's all these faculty and admin staff there who are shocked and awed and not ready if they're the ones who get tapped on the shoulder and say, hey, you're not working here anymore. And so what I'm interested in is how do we get people to get the now done well, because that's super important. And for me, by the way, the now is just that period of time where you know for sure what you're doing.
So, and what's the time horizon there? Like, if we're talking now, is that the next, you know, between now and the next few months? What typically do you talk about when you talk about now with clients?
Well, it's very individual, but for the average, you know, working person that I work with, it's about a year.
Yes.
You know, for a year, I kind of know what my desk will look like and what kind of people I'll be working with and that sort of thing. But, you know, 2 years out, I'm not so sure.
Yes.
You know, if I'm working with a high school student, the now is typically a term, so for somebody in grade 12 right now, the now ends after exams in June, and next is after that.
Right. Shorter time horizons when you're younger.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So in the now, you know, there's some things that people need to do, right? They need to get better at what they're doing always, right? That's how you keep your job and get bonuses and that sort of thing. Hopefully people are adding value to their work or to their families or wherever their dominant role is, and hopefully building relationships. And so we're all doing that, I hope, in the now. But what I guess I ask clients to do is give a few percentages of your energy and time to thinking about next. Like, what are the trends that are going to affect your work around the corner? What new knowledge and skills do you need to think about developing so that you're ready for what's around the corner? What can you start doing now to try out what might be around the corner? So, for example, you know, I was working with a bunch of career counselors yesterday and in an organization where there's significant change going on. And, you know, for some of them, their next would be moving into a teaching role.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than wait for, you know, the shoe to drop and budget cuts to happen or whatever, you know, my challenge to them was, well, can't you start teaching next week? You know, can't you find somebody who you could teach? Can't you take on a little contract where maybe you teach on a weekend just to get a feel for what next might be?
Right. So it's kind of like planting the seeds of next in the now. So get started in some small way of what might be next so that at least you're prepared if something happens that is surprising, you know, that does happen in our economy these days, that you've planted some seeds for next and that they can start to grow pretty soon.
Exactly. Or you find out they wither and die right away because you don't like it, it's not suitable, but then you still have time to adjust, right, and try something else.
Yes.
And so either way, it's going to be useful and it's going to minimize risk.
And what would you advise for the time horizon for next? You know, if now was maybe a term if you're a student, or maybe within the first within the year if you're an employed person, what is next?
For next, and again, most of my clients are employed, it's 1 to 4 years out.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, you know, for example, I do a lot of work with police, right? And so they say, well, I just want to be a beat cop forever. My challenge to them is, well, forever is a very long time, right? And it may be a ton of fun now, but things are going to change. You're going to change. And I'm not saying you can't, you know, you shouldn't be a beat cop. I'm just saying, hang on, if something comes around the corner, can you get yourself ready for it? And for most people, yeah, a year is a good starting point, a year to 2 years. But then after 4 years, it starts getting very fuzzy, and
yes,
then I start calling that future.
Future, right? There's a little phrase that I hear in our company, Career Cycles. We speak to lots of clients, and sometimes people throw this little phrase out, and they're thinking about next, you know, and they say, "Well, I don't know if I want to do that for the rest of my life."
Oh, man.
There's the little phrase for the
yeah.
rest. What is it about that phrase that scares people? You know, the beat cop who says, "I want to do this for the rest of my life," or the person who says, "No, Dave, I don't want to do that thing
yeah.
that you're suggesting for the rest of my life," as if career change is going to, you know, go beyond, you know, a couple of years.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think one of the, I mean, there is sort of this human need for certainty about the future, right? I mean, if anything can make a person anxious, it's not knowing what the future holds.
Yes.
And in fact, you know, if you look at the whole world of anthropology, that is one of the few common core fears across any culture, is not knowing what the future holds. And we all, you know, defend against anxiety. And one of the ways we do that is to, you know, to make these categorical things about, you know, I'm going to be a teacher, you know, and we put occupational labels on things, or you know, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life.
Yes.
Because it removes that anxiety. But, you know, we have to find, or as practitioners, I think, just gentle ways to get people to question that belief and to somehow manage their anxiety while they're doing it, so that they can comfortably look at the future and go, yeah, I might be doing something different, and that might be just fine.
Right.
And I think actually that is part of what this now next future model
yes.
does, is it does remove that anxiety.
And the future, when you talk about the future, this is now beyond that next window of 1 to 4 years.
Yeah, the future for me is that if everything went right, what would your life look like? And it's kind of timeless that way. But it's definitely, if you can map it out clearly with, you know, clear goals and that sort of thing, then it's not future yet. It's still next.
Yes.
You know, future is to me a bit hazy, a bit unrealistic, a bit dreamlike, about, you know, what's the ideal life that I would like to live if I could, you know, if everything went right. And it's not that that becomes a destination. It's more like it becomes a North Star against which to bounce every other decision.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I like that metaphor, the North Star that doesn't move in the sky. You can always navigate. You always know which way to go because it doesn't move.
Right.
And that's the idea. These are the dreams, the things that you just find so compelling that it would keep you moving in a direction, even if there's lots of meandering on the way to that direction.
Absolutely. And it's a direction without a destination.
That's great, Dave. I really appreciate the now next future. I think listeners can really think about that in their own careers and lives. Now, we just have a couple of more minutes, and I know you've got a lot of interesting things coming up next, and I don't know if you're able to speak about any of them. I know that there's this idea of a national career quiz. There's maybe a world's record that I've heard about. Is there anything is there anything that you can talk about out of all of that exciting stuff?
Oh, you know, well, given that you brought up the world record thing, I think, you know, I think one of the things we need to do as a field is get really, you know, Canadians talking about their own career development as much as possible in a way that it's just about curiosity, not about panic in terms of making a decision. And you know, lots of people talk about career development when they're unemployed, when they're in trouble, when they've just been laid off. And then as soon as things stabilize, they stop thinking about it. And I would like to create a situation where people are just talking about it more. And so the world record thing is an idea that maybe we'll all collectively pull off. But I was thinking, you know, we could structure a very simple career conversations that people could have with each other about their values, their interests, their dreams, and how they might start moving in those directions. And I was thinking it would be great to just run career conversations, have one evening in Canada, one day, all at the same time, all across the country. And so imagine, you know, people in hotel meeting rooms all across the country, and everybody counts who's in the room, they have the conversations, and we set a Guinness World Book of Records for simultaneous career conversations.
Like in Canada? Like
yeah,
Canada would set this across the country?
That's what I'm thinking. I think
do you have a date picked?
Pardon me?
Do you have a date picked yet?
No. And in fact, what we're the few people I've been talking about it with is we would tie it to Career Development Week, which is in November.
November.
But it might not be this November. It might be next November. But we'll see.
Well, that is a great idea, Dave. I am looking forward to participating, and I promise to be, part of that group when it finally rolls around. Maybe we'll do a radio show that day, to put it live. And finally, Dave, from your own personal career and life situation, you shared a little bit with listeners about your own career story. What's one thing that you can share with listeners about what you've personally learned from your experience about making good career and life choices?
Get as clear as possible about your own values and your own interests. You know, what gets you out of bed in the morning in terms of what's important to you and what's enjoyable, and then place or bounce every decision against those values and interests, which is, by the way, the same as saying bounce every decision against your preferred future. You know, I mean, even silly things, right? Like if you're in your preferred future, you're healthy and active and your lifestyle is outdoorsy and all that, then what you have for breakfast this morning is a career decision.
Nice. That's great advice. Dave, if people want to find out more about you and your company, how do they do that?
Our website, which is the world's dustiest at the moment, is currently being revamped, but it's life-roll.com. And they can go to the website and see papers we've written and talks we've given and lots of, fair amount of free material. It's mostly designed for practitioners, not
yes.
the general public, but the general public could still find it useful.
Excellent. Dave Redekop, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. We've been talking to Dave Redekop of the Life Role Development Group here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. We are going to have, after the break, our guest, Tony Botello from Simon Fraser University's Career and Volunteer Services. He had a musical pick for us. I'll let him explain it after you listen to it. Here is Who Is They by Memory Day.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. I'm practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Before continuing on with today's show, I want to let listeners know about the archive of Career Buzz inspiring career stories. If you click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com, you can listen to my show on careers in Canadian film. It was March 13th. We had Bern Euler of the Canadian Film Festival and members of the production team of a feature film called The Disappeared. We heard from producer Ralph Holt and Marine coordinator Bill Flower. Bill had quite an interesting career story. If anybody is interested in the ocean and diving, you got to listen to Bill's story. On February 27th, we talked about the superstore of experiences you get when you volunteer. Especially volunteering in some kind of networking organization. We had three presidents and past presidents of JCI Toronto who joined us. And if you check jcitoronto.ca, you click on events and you'll find out that tonight, March 27th, is the Who You Are Matters Career and Life Clarification Experience run by jcitoronto.ca. It's 6 to 9 p.m. in Toronto, March 27th. And all of that stuff is from the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com. Now, on to our next guest, Tony Botello, who is manager of Simon Fraser University's Career and Volunteer Services. Tony joins Career Buzz today. He's going to share his perspective on career education in the age of engagement. That was a topic he recently presented at the National Connexus Career Conference. And we'll also be talking to Tony about student engagement and retention and whether there's a relationship between these notions and developing your career for the future. Tony recently completed a master's degree focusing on the role of career education in contemporary university environment. And Tony joins us from the Lower Mainland in BC. Welcome to Career Buzz, Tony Botello.
Hi there, Mark.
So, Tony, what do you like these days about your career and life?
I actually think I have it pretty good. So I like most aspects. I'm in a work setting where I feel I'm actually able to use, you know, whatever abilities, skills, you know, that I like to use. And I also work with a team, and it's a group that's highly motivated. People take a lot of initiative, and it's quite a fun workplace. And then match that with a pretty happy and fun family setup, and I think overall things are pretty good these days.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're firing on all cylinders.
Pretty much, except for this virus, but otherwise.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning, because I know you weren't feeling great these last few days, so I appreciate you joining us, especially seeing as it's a bit earlier where you are than where we are here in Toronto.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
And so when you're being the manager of the career services and volunteer services at Simon Fraser, what are some of the skills and strengths that you draw on regularly to be successful?
I think one of the main things I think for me is generally around communication on sort of both ends. I think both communicating, you know, with team members here, you know, understanding, you know, their perspectives, listening to them, hearing them in terms of their desires and sort of ideas in terms of moving forward. But also, I think, communicating with people around the university and finding ways to understand what it is that they're looking for, what they're doing, and trying to and make those connections between what we're doing here in career services and volunteer services is relevant to what they're doing and how we could actually be of benefit to them.
Right on. And we're going to find out how it is relevant in a few moments. How did you come to be working in a post-secondary institution? What's your story that led to this very interesting career that you have now?
Well, I suspect like a lot of people you get, it sort of took a kind of roundabout route. It's not anything that was ever on my radar as a university student or any other part of my life. Basically, I'd gone to a university initially to be an accountant from small town BC and didn't know what else to do. And someone said, you should be an accountant. And I said, okay, I'll be an accountant. And then I did that until my very first accounting course. And I realized, wow, I'm actually not that good at this thing. So I switched around, but I still stuck within a business area. And I did the co-op program where I exposed myself. It was sort of one of my first times of actually trying to be a bit more intentional in terms of trying out different things.
Yes.
And And I found working in the sort of the more not-for-profit-y side of things, for whatever reason, I found that much more satisfying, more enjoyable, and seems to be a much better fit for me. So after I graduated, I really looked hard into trying to get into the not-for-profit. But for those who know not-for-profit, the nature of not-for-profit, they don't generally have a lot of money, and there's not always a ton of positions for new people who are still sort of looking. So I just kept was looking and looking. I was unemployed for quite a while after my university graduation, and then a position came up with a place called the Open Learning Agency, which is a which I didn't even know existed at the time, and it was a provincial government agency at that time focusing on distance education, and they were looking for someone to work in First Nations studies and disability services as an office assistant. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that seems to be kind of a fit. And I started in there, and then over time I focused on the disability side, and that entrenched me in post-secondary, and then a position came up at Simon Fraser in disability to start up a disability office, and I moved into that, and then that was about 16 years ago, and then I've moved around to about four or five positions within SFU since then.
Wow, great story with a few interesting twists in it. But again, like our earlier guest, if listeners were tuning in to Dave Redekop, we had such a similar story. I mean, he said he was interested in physics. You were interested at first in accounting. And, you know, we have these notions of what we think we're good at, especially that transition from high school to post-secondary, and you get started. And parents, too. I mean, parents might be listening, too, and they're so intently focused on getting the right program as if that's what they're going to do, using a phrase from the earlier interview, for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And so, Tony, what can you share with listeners about, especially maybe to parents here who might be listening, about this intensity of focusing in on that program that you get into right after high school? You know, when your story and Dave's story and almost every story that I hear seems to be all about the twists and turns that happen after those program selections.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing, and I do actually speak to parents both in my regular life as well occasionally here in my professional role, is the first thing is to relax. We don't have to have everything figured out for your person, right, for your son or daughter at this point in time, and to encourage that exploration and trying things out. I remember Dave had a great term. I forgot what he said about the some sort of mistakes or those actions. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, it was inefficient risks.
Inefficient risks.
That's
very
it.
Nice. I like that. And I think that's great. So I say don't worry too much about the specific nature of the program. It's great to have ideas. Again, back to the North Star idea, I thought that was great as well. It's great to have ideas, great to have concepts, but don't worry too much about it initially. And the other thing, as I also encourage them, is while they're going to school, and this could be even high school or in post-secondary, you know, encourage them to engage in other activities. We often talk about here is having the parallel stream. You should have your academic stream and then some sort of parallel stream where you're engaged in other stuff, partially to sort of, it could be to follow up on interests or passions you may already have, or maybe, you know, to gain some experience and connections, or just to just be doing things and to exposing yourself to different stuff.
Right on. And we've seen how that parallel stream and the experiences that you gain can so often be the seeds that get planted for future career ideas.
Yeah. In fact, I would say more often I don't have research to back on this, but my personal experiences and anecdotal is that it's those other things that tend to have more influence in where people, the sort of things people end up doing anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen it now, and there's a lot of thinking around that notion of chaos theory and the connection to careers when some small thing that happens in one part of your life has a gigantic influence somewhere else. And there's been a lot of talk about that because of the changing nature of the economy and the way things have been so much. The pace of change has increased, and how can you plan out your future all the way, you know, for the next 10 years when that kind of thing happens?
Yeah, well, and we even use the example of both, you know, the internal changes that happen in the individual and then the external changes. And one of the stories, examples we often use is students who would have graduated, let's say, last year in 2012. And let's just say, you know, for students who've done co-op and other activities, maybe they takes them about 5 years to graduate. So they started in 2007. The world in 2007 and the world in 2012 were completely different places.
Right on, they absolutely were.
Right. And so, again, back to this notion of, you know, you need to know and plan it and have it all figured out, whereas in the course of one's academic program, the world can do a 180, let alone the changes that are happening personally.
It's so true. So, and all that leads us to some of the really important questions about how to connect the dots between our education and career possibilities. So I want to talk to you about that in a minute. I just want to let listeners know we are talking here to Tony Battelli. He's the manager of Simon Fraser University's Career and Volunteer Services. And Simon Fraser University is out in the Lower Mainland in BC. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz, CIUT 89.5 FM in the Greater Toronto Area and CIUT.FM worldwide. So, Tony, you've been thinking about this a lot. I said in the intro you recently finished a master's degree focusing on the role of career education in post-secondary institutions, and you've been presenting on this very topic. So let's just start off by, what is it that seems to be important to students? What do students want? Why do students go to university in the first place?
Well, it's an interesting thing. When you actually survey students, particularly, and there's been these... the Canadian University Research Council, I can't remember the exact term right now, they do these surveys of incoming students, and one of the things they found consistently over time is the number one reason that students, and this is for university specific, I imagine there's similar surveys in other aspects of post-secondary, but for the university sector specifically, the number one reason by far that individuals come to university is for reasons related to career or employment afterwards. So it's their single biggest motivator. Things like, you know, wanting to learn and gain that academic knowledge is also very high. But when you're asked to pick out one item above anything else, about two-thirds of students entering university will say it's for career and employment reasons. So when they first start, this is what they're motivated about. The challenge is, once they actually get into university, they get so focused on the academic value of the university and in terms of doing well, and which is not necessarily a bad thing. That's what they're supposed to do. But in terms of back to that notion of the parallel stream or thinking intentionally about how we're going to use this afterwards, as a result of that, some students, you know, too many in my opinion, will actually not be looking at the other things they can be doing or thinking about their future or the next phase, using Dave Redekop's language, and be just so focused on the here and now in terms of doing academically well that they aren't focused on or looking at things that could help them in the future.
Right on. So that's really key. And it's this parallel stream. I mean, I used to work in post-secondary institutions also, and I've just seen it, and you've seen it. And, you know, if we have listeners who are in a post-secondary or recent grads from a post-secondary experience, you know, you're probably thinking about this too from more of the now perspective from what Dave was saying. Yeah. So let's now try and connect the dots. Now, students come to post-secondary because of career and employment needs. Now, there's this other notion of engagement and engaging students.
Right.
And so once they're there, you know, gee, I came because I think that this is going to help me in my future and my career. And now there's this whole notion of student engagement. So take us through that. What does that mean?
Student engagement... is a field in the overall student service areas, which I think my take on it anyway is looking at what an institution can do to make the whole student experience, the fuller student experience, richer, more satisfying, more fulfilling, and as a result, because of these added things, you know, make students feel more connected, make students feel more that supported. That, you know, that people actually care for them, that there's activities that they can participate in and engage in. Institutions who do this well actually find that those students actually do better in the academic side as well. So all this non-academic, what's on the surface, non-academic supports and programming actually helps the academic goals in terms of higher grades, more likely to complete programs, complete degrees, and so on.
And that's this retention idea. And I think listeners might be surprised to hear how many students don't complete the degree that they began in. And I know I was doing some research on this. You know, colleges in Canada have a bit of a different result than universities, but there's actually quite a few students who do not complete at least the program that they initially started with. Do you have a sense of those numbers?
Well, I know some of the numbers that are generally cited. And this is North America-wide. The biggest dropout rate typically happens in first year, which is I guess it makes some sense. I didn't realize it as much until I started looking into the research, but first year is really the riskiest year. And there's something like in universities across North America, and this has been steady since I think about the early 1970s when some of this research started, it's about 1 in 4 students will drop out after their first year in a university program.
So that's a huge number. That's sort of the number that I've heard, 25%.
Yeah.
And I think listeners are going to be surprised. I mean, I found that almost breathtaking when I first heard it, because you think there's so much emphasis, and parents especially are putting so much emphasis on their kids to go to post-secondary and university, and this is what's going on. So back to the idea of engagement, what can we do that engages people, especially in that first year, so that they feel like they're connected and that this is all going smoothly and that they're feeling good about what they're doing?
Yeah. Well, and even to just take a step back, one of the almost reasons for not taking the issue of first-year retention seriously was this notion that, oh, these probably were students who weren't academically prepared or they weren't ready for university. You know, we're just doing our, you know, we're weeding out. We're doing what we're supposed to do as an institute with high standards. But when you actually look at it, there was actually a BC study that showed something like 40% of those who dropped out in that first year came in with A averages. So they're often, so basically anyone who drops out basically has to be smart enough to get into the institution, which, you know, generally have pretty high standards.
Yes.
And then when I found out that in this one group, it was like 40% had A averages, it shows it wasn't just people who weren't academically unfit. Something else was going on.
Something else. So now let's look at the connection. Now we've got the what's important to students, and that's employment and career. We've got this notion of engagement and why that's important. Now, what is the connection between that and career development?
Well, one of the things that I found interesting is, there's different people who have looked at this area of engagement and retention. And some of the things that has come up is, again, this importance of engaging students within first year. So setting up some programming for them, finding ways for them to get involved, finding ways for them to feel connected, et cetera. As well as this notion of getting them doing things on campus. Again, you know, whether it's joining clubs, associations, whatever it was, as well as specific programs that are created by the institution to sort of take advantage of students who want to, you know, who are keener, want to be more involved in sort of leadership type activities. So there's a whole bunch of this type of program that's now going on. And we found that was actually quite similar to our thinking in terms of our view of, you know, work life or career, whatever terms we want to use, in that we wanted students to start thinking about these activities as early as possible in their academic lives. And part of what we wanted people to do is this notion of, again, back to this idea of the parallel stream. And we thought the parallel stream, the idea of engaging and doing stuff outside of academics, we thought it was actually very similar to what the student engagement people were trying to do.
Yes.
And so what we've done is, and this is part within my research, but also in practice, is, you know, we've started reaching out and working very closely with these types of groups and finding that there's been quite a mutual benefit in that they have this programming and this reach that perhaps we don't always have. Because one of the challenges with the career services at a post-secondary is that it's a volunteer program. No one has to see us.
Yes.
So to connect with organizations or groups on campus that are running programs that are maybe reaching out to students that we wouldn't necessarily see was very beneficial and attractive to us. At the same time, the type of programming and language we could say about how this type of activities and things they're engaging in would actually have a self-interest angle, we found it was very attractive to the other side because it helped make their programming a bit more meaningful for the students.
And comes back to the reason why the students came to the institution in the first place, which is what you said a while ago, because of employment and career prospects.
Yeah, and again, that's why they come. But still, a lot of them will think just the nature of going to university and having a degree is the ticket, as opposed to our thinking as well. It's part of the ticket, but there's these other things that you really need to be working on as well.
Right on. We are talking to Tony Botello. He's manager of Simon Fraser University's Career and Volunteer Services on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CIUT.FM worldwide. Tony, one of the researchers that you've cited is Aston, and there's a little quote here that I loved. It says, "If we create opportunities for students to interact and learn together, in an academic environment, some good things will happen. And while it's not always possible to know beforehand just what these good things will be, the students seldom disappoint us. I love that. The good things that you don't know that are going to happen is pretty much where almost everybody's career story starts. What can you say about that quote?
Well, it is actually one of my favorite quotes, and I always, love, when I came across that, I was quite thrilled, because I'd read a bit of Aston in beforehand, because, this notion of involvement and being involved is a pretty, wasn't a hard one for someone from a career perspective to grasp. And then, that specific quote about, let them happen, particularly when you read a lot of academic journals. This notion, we don't always know what good thing it's going to be, but the students that tell them disappointed, there was a simplicity and an honesty about it that I loved. And I also really reflected so much of what we see and what we hear of anecdotally.
Absolutely.
People engage in activities and good stuff happens, often which you could never have even imagined beforehand.
It closely parallels the area of research called emergence science. And there's been a lot of talk about that. And things emerge, things that aren't planned on. It's even the way cities develop and the way ant colonies work. No one little thing creates the whole. But when you put all of these pieces together, all the activities in the parallel stream together with the academic stream in a career and academic context, then good things happen and things emerge. And it's just tricky to convince people that that will be the case and that the story they will tell 5 or 10 years hence will be a story of some sort of emergence and the clues that people followed and the actions that they took, as opposed to some sort of well-planned out thing that they started planning in grade 11 and just, plodded through all the way till they're, 30 and engaged in their career.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of the reasons, even when we present to students, whether it's in a group setting or one-to-one, we often will cite various statistics that sort of suggest that the plan is not the way things always work out and there's other factors at play. And often when we bring in speakers or activities, we often encourage people, even in their intros, to do some sort of brief story that hopefully highlights some of this meandering and some of the emergence.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here on Career Buzz, is to get people's stories so that others can listen and hear, hey, Tony didn't have it all figured out. He wanted to be an accountant way back when, and now look at him.
Yeah.
So
But that being said, to use your language, I still use those accounting skills as an asset that helps me as a manager when I have to do things like budgets and projections and proposals and such.
I think that's so important, right? We have these assets and they may not be central to our career, but we can always draw on them. So there are no mistakes. There are no, kind of wasted experiences. You always have those things in your back pocket to use later on.
Yeah.
So briefly, we just have a couple more minutes, and I know time flies when we're talking about this stuff, but what is happening on your campus that might, if a fly on the wall were looking at what's going on at SFU, what would they see that brings all of this good stuff to light?
Well, one of the interesting things that's happened is, with a new president that started a few years ago, and there was a whole re-envisioning of what, of SFU and sort of building on some of these strengths, this notion of, we're actually now referred to as the engaged university, this language of engagement and the importance of, a richer, fuller experience for undergraduate students that looks at them more holistically. And, some of the language we look at that has actually been used is, prepares them for, a complex and challenging world. For someone in my position, it is actually quite interesting and exciting because it just opens up all sorts of possibilities and all sorts of places where, and not only can we work with other groups and other faculty areas, as we have been doing, but I think it also opens up some specific niche areas that I think we're uniquely positioned to support, particularly in preparing and getting students to think about, the inherent complexity and change of life.
Right on. And Tony, just in a word, because we're going to have to wrap up in a moment, from your back to your personal life and career experiences, what can you share with listeners about some advice or something that you've learned personally from making good career and life choices?
Most of the best choices I've made, well, particularly in some of my work setting ones, almost every job I have had, I actually didn't even think I wanted to do it. So at a certain point, I didn't even know it existed. But there was also a point where I said, nah, it's not something I think I want to do.
Yeah.
But I allowed myself to stay open and different conversations and possibilities, and these, you know, certain positions that I thought I'd never be interested in doing, I ended up finding highly satisfying. So it's one of those you just never know.
Stay open. Tony Botello, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives.